Coming up, what an excellent day for floating beds. Introducing the Levitron 5000. Tired of your is your old massage bed that you ordered off the TV giving you a hard time? Does it seem like it's possessed by a demon? Well, how about you get a bed that's actually possessed by a demon? The Levitron 5000. Well, howdy, folks, and welcome to Minute 108 of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we endeavor to examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we'll be your holy guides on this journey through what some have called the scariest movie of all time. Okay, so our minute begins with Merrin saying, "And to redeem through your son, who lives and reigns with you."
And it ends with him making the sign of the cross over Reagan.
Yes, folks.
Or howdy.
Across from where? Oh, yeah, it's just across from the subway. Or the sub thing.
That's so stupid. All right.
Is it bread or is it gym mat material? We don't know. Is it real tuna?
Know.
I don't know. I still love it, though. That's my sin. But yes, folks, you'll remember our last minute cut off as Merrin was beginning that line, to redeem. And I thought this was such a perfect place to end thematically, because this is the beginning of the end. And not only are we, of course, trying to save Reagan, all of the characters are on some sort of path to redemption. For Chris, it lies in her unwavering love for her daughter. Remember, I said, I believe Howdy has lost before the exorcism even begins. And I was talking about Chris and her unrelenting devotion to Reagan, which radiates out and touches everyone in that house. Willie and Carl and Sharon, and now these two priests. Everyone who comes into that house is touched by that love, and it makes them rise to the call and become the best versions of themselves so that they can help her and help Reagan. We joke about the patriarchy line also, right? Hashtag not my Chris. But you do have to admit that in this final battle, especially with all these fireworks that Howdy is putting on, we forget a little bit about Chris. But she is the first main character that we meet, and she has done her own harrowing of hell. She has gone to hell in this movie. She found Damien already down there. He wasn't even the one she was looking for, but she saved him, called upon him to help save her daughter, and gave him purpose again. And speaking of Dimmy, I think our listeners are right to call us out for being a little hard on Dimmy in these later minutes. And we thought about why this might be, why we might be so frustrated with him in these later scenes. And we came to the conclusion that it's because he is us. We also identify with Chris, but in a different way. Chris is doing everything right in a world that won't listen to her and is constantly shitting on her. She's fighting the whole world, and she's doing everything right. We identify with her that way. She is doing everything in her power, and it is not enough, but she is still fighting. And she can do all that because, like we'll see with Merrin later, her concern for herself is almost non-existent. It has completely evaporated with the birth of her daughter. So even before this movie. Although I do think we see a mini version of that play out in the movie, showing us her as a mom with a job and an outside life, and her having to let all of those things go for the sake of Reagan.
Or in the book, right, she loses the chance to direct part of that anthology movie, and so she says, "I lost hope," which is
right,
the name of the movie, right?
She literally loses hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, so that's Chris. She is presented with this problem. She does everything right, including stepping out of herself and focusing on Reagan, and it's still not enough. Dimmy, on the other hand, is still buried inside himself. He is still in his own hell, and that's how the story begins for him. And I like how you differentiated, Keenan, between hero, main character, and protagonist, right? We got this trinity of characters who, in another story, they might just have it be one character, right? But these three are fragments. They are fragmented. And mm-hmm. with Dimmy, he is us. He is the one who has the most climbing to do. He is the one who needs to learn the most. Chris has figured it out. Marin has figured it out. And that puts both of them a little further from us. But Dimmy is just as lost as we are. And it is so weird to hear my own self talking about Dimmy being selfish. Because remember, folks, when we first met him, I say he's my favorite character. I think I've said that about everybody now. but the thing I admired about him was his selflessness. In the book, he helps Vinnie Russell, right? The vagrant in the subway. He does everything he can for his mother. He stays and he listens to the younger priests who are going through their own crises of faith. He can't not help Chris. Again, he has that quality, as Marcus Zusak puts it, the quality of not leaving. Dimmy is solid. Dimmy is good. And that's why it feels so weird going through this story this time around and realizing that of all our main characters, he is the one who needs to shed his sense of self the most. Even though he is so selfless, he is trapped in that hell that he has created. That he is creating the hell of his own self, his own thoughts, his own doubts and fears. Mm. But like I said, folks, I'm excited because it feels like he is finally climbing out of that hell in these minutes. So let's get back to the top of this minute. Remember, folks, we got Howdy thrashing around on the bed after just having been sprinkled with holy water. Howdy is no longer happy. His moaning is no longer ambiguous. Ever since the mention of Reagan's full name in the last minute, we can tell that he is in pain. Marin continues that line. He says, "And to redeem through your son who lives and reigns with you." And then we cut, and we're now on Dimmy's face. And yes, folks, I don't think I'm crazy. We see a change. Dimmy's afraid. Of course he is. But remember, just last minute, we had all of those Abbott and Costello double takes and you know, the shifty glances as he was like looking for a way out of this dream, out of this mm-hmm. nightmare. But now his eyes are fixed and his face is still. He may not know what he is looking at, or maybe he's like realizing it right now, but he is not looking away. He is not turning away in fear, nor is he allowing himself to be distracted by bedposts and noises. He is beholding something right now. He is beholding the infinite. And I like how, yes, there's fear there, but look how big Dimmy's pupils are. We talked in the last minute about how Howdy has changed Reagan's pupils, right? Mm-hmm. They're these tiny black pinpricks in these yellow-green eyes, right? Our pupils get like that in response to really bright light, but also when we're looking at something we don't like. And Howdy's a demon, so he's going to hate, you know, most of what he's looking at. And the opposite happens to our eyes when we are in a really, really dark place. Our eyes, our pupils dilate. They get much, much bigger to take in as much light as possible. But that also happens when we are looking at something or someone that we really love. And actually, Keenan, this is really disturbing, but I can recall one scene where Howdy/Reagan's pupils were so big that her eyes looked black. Mm. Do you remember which scene that was?
No, and you're saying it's because she was so happy. She was yes. trying to take it in so much. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
No, when was she happy? I don't know.
It was when she smacked Chris across the room, right? It was, they were fighting with the crucifix. It was, do you know what she did? And there's this quick cut. She smacks Ellen Burstyn across, or Chris, right? Across mm-hmm. the room. And she lands on her coccyx, right? In the corner or against the wall. And we get a quick shot of Howdy/Reagan. And those eyes are just black.
And having she the is the time of her goddamn life, huh?
Right?
Jeez.
Yeah. And that is something beautiful for Howdy. That's something he wants to eat up with his eyes. He wants to get every morsel of this pain that he's causing, right? Same thing with the Eileen Dietz face in the dream, right? Those eyes are also really big. And we talked before about how Howdy in the dream has this hungry look to him, right? To that white face, right? It's those moments when Howdy is hungry that his eyes are like that. Whether it's the Eileen Dietz face or, you know, the Reagan face. And yeah, so speaking of hungry, now we can go back and talk about Dimmy's eyes in this shot. Dimmy, who has been starving for a sign. His soul has been hungering for a glimpse of God's face. And I like the idea that this is how God is showing himself to Dimmy. This is what Dimmy needs to see. Dimmy's a smart cookie, right? He's a little too smart for his own good, right? And God's like, if I show you the way that you want to be shown, right? Like if I show you miracles, if I come to you in dreams, right? Like that's what Dimmy asks him in the book. He says, give me a sign, come to me in dreams. But God's like, if I show you in those ways, you already have an argument prepared. I made you too smart. If I show you good things, Dimmy, you're not going to recognize it because you don't even recognize your own goodness. No, I have to show you my shadow. I have to show you my enemy. And because you are logical, you will say to yourself, there is no shadow without light. And you will start to wonder, if the devil is real, then...
So again, thinking about like what Damien is supposed to do, and we're judging Damien too harshly or whatever. Right. Like, what is Damien supposed to do? Like, Damien is supposed to see the death of his mother as a miracle. I mean, because it's like, you know, your mother is going to the right hand of the Father and you know, and is cured of her earthly pain. And now you're all by yourself and you're supposed to see that as a miracle because you have fellowship with God and fellowship with other people who also serve God. Is that what Damien is supposed to do with all that?
I'm not saying I would do any different. Like, I would be exactly where Dimmy is, right?
But what does God want from him, Lester?
I know. But we're kind of... Both he and us, like we are in this unfair situation because we are aware that we're watching a movie and we know the rules of the movie. We know the rules of the game. We know what Dimmy is supposed to do according to the rules in the universe of the movie. So we're watching it and, you know, just like any other horror movie, we're like, don't go upstairs. Don't go through that door, right? And so we're like, you got to have more faith, Dimmy, right? don't turn to science. When it's like, in real life, that is exactly what we would do, right? And I would hold on science, you know, and like me, being Catholic, I would still hold on to science for as long as possible because it's just, like, I think what we're asking of Dimmy is impossible. The rules of the movie say he has to do it. And everybody else is on board, and Dimmy's the last one to jump on board. And we're like, God, come on, Dimmy. But like, I mean, that's the, it's the, we are criticizing Dimmy for doing the exact opposite of what they did do in fucking Believer. Do you remember how quickly they jumped to demon in that movie? And we were like, oh, come on. You did like just one doctor visit and you're already ready to, you know, like have an exorcism. Like,
these girls' feet are burned, so they've been through hell. So
they must have been to that that biblical place.
Right.
That nobody has any proof of. Of course, right? Couldn't be that they accidentally stepped on something hot.
right.
Yeah. But no, so that like we are being unfair. Like what do we want from Dimmy right now?
Right.
But okay. So that's a fair question. What are we like? I'm saying right now that I'm glad that Dimmy is finally, you know, catching on. What are we glad about? Like, what are we hoping for right now with him?
Jeez, I don't know. I think you're onto something that we're hard on him because he is a stand-in for us, right? And he's become us, and we're just like, Jesus, Dimmy, get it together. I wonder if our Catholic listeners are having the same problem with Damien that we're having because we're seeing him in all of his faults. Because we're really talking about ourselves.
Yeah, we absolutely are, right? And it's that same feeling you get in a movie that is about ghosts, you mm-hmm. know it's about ghosts, mm-hmm. and all of the adults are like, there's no such things as ghosts, right? telling the kids. And we're like, man, adults are stupid. These kids get it, but these adults, mm-hmm. right? There's no such thing as a werewolf. Your teacher's not a monster from the Black Lagoon, right? But we know, like, we rented the thing from Blockbuster. We know, we saw the fucking picture on the
It's on the cover.
Yeah. Geez, parents, what are you, idiots? But that's that unfair advantage, I think, that watchers of the movie versus characters of the movie, right? But then, Kenan, like, let's say that I show up to your house one day mm-hmm. and I say, all right, you're going to think I'm crazy, but our good buddy Ian Hinden mm-hmm. is a leprechaun.
But he's so tall, I would say.
Yeah, that's the first thing you would say.
Yeah. I guess also that I've known him since I was 8 years old, and uh-huh. I've never seen him do any leprechaun-y things.
He's been really crafty.
I've never seen him do a little jig or smoke a little pipe.
Hey, you know, but now, wait. Now mm-hmm. we're generalizing mm-hmm. about leprechauns. Let's not do that. Okay.
I mean, I've seen Ian do a lot of Dance Dance Revolution.
Sure.
That's, I guess, like a jig. The upper part of his body stays straight and his legs just go crazy.
Exactly. Have you noticed that he never loses?
Yeah, I've never seen him lose Dance Dance Revolution. And he's a DDR always, god.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And he always places a wager right before he plays.
He puts his little coin on it, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
On the
yeah.
machine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He says it's to hold his spot in line.
Yeah,
but no,
yeah.
There's never a line.
No, there's never a line. Yeah. He likes Skittles. Which are rainbow themed.
They are rainbow themed.
I think this, yeah.
All right, we have to have a conversation with an intervention, if you will, with Ian.
Yeah. But no, like that's what I'm saying, folks. Like, because Dimmy is us, and because we are on the outside watching this movie, we have put him in an unfair place, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's just kind of the nature of these stories, right? The person you identify with, you're going to be the hardest on, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, right.
Especially when you're watching his actions over the course of the 2 years.
Right.
You're watching it a minute at a time. Going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why are you doing this, Dan? Yeah.
Folks, have you ever like gone back and watched like old movies and just looked at how stupid you were and how dumb everything you said was?
Yeah, I have a home video of me reading a Berenstain Bears joke, like to my family, and going around to each one of them asking, and they're all doing their own thing, and I'm like, no one likes this joke. No one likes this joke. And it's the Berenstain Bears, like, get healthy or something. And so the mom is trying to cut them off from candy and soda. Uh-huh. And they're like, you don't want us to drink soda. What are we supposed to drink? And the mom says, get this, Lester. Okay. The mom says, try this. It's called water. And I'm in this video going around, like, look at this. It says, try this. It's called water. And they're like, uh-huh. I'm like, it's called water. Uh-huh. And I'm going to everybody in my house telling them the exact same joke. Idiot. Like a 3 or 4 year old moron who can't read the room, that they don't want to hear what the fucking Berenstain Bears are up to.
Kenan, I think that we were both very sophisticated, maybe precocious, some might say,
mm-hmm, yeah.
children. But I think we had an elevated sense of humor back then, and you were able to appreciate this joke, and you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, that's the curse of being, you know, the geniuses that we are.
To understand the Berenstain Bears before, yes. Before they became big. Right.
Before they changed their name.
I know.
Berenstain Bears, which is pronounced the same, but what is going on? Have you heard of this? The Fruit of the Loom conspiracy?
Yeah, I still think there's a cornucopia on the Fruit of the Loom thing, but yes, the Berenstain Bears. I don't know how that happened to us.
I don't know.
I've never understood this. Mm-hmm. And then I've gone back and found my actual Berenstain Bears books, and there's mm-hmm. Berenstain, S-T-A-I-N.
Wow.
I don't know. And here, so yeah, the one I read was The Berenstain Bears and Too Much Junk Food.
Mm.
And it's a shot of Mama and Mama's looking over at the family, and uh-huh. they're eating sugar popcorn and like Jordan almonds and potato chips and those swirly lollipops.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
She just has her hands on her hips, and she is so pissed at them. And now I'm looking at all these other ones, and that's her pose in almost every single one of these covers. The Berenstain Bears forget their manners. The Berenstain Bears go out to eat. The Berenstain Bears have trouble at school. The Berenstain Bears get the gimmies. The Berenstain Bears in the truth. Mama is just pissed at her family. Every single one of these. Like, that's her job.
What are you saying, Berenstain Bears? What are you saying about Mama Bear? Like what are we? Yeah. Sheesh. Anyway, so you're saying that that Mama Bear is Chris McNeil.
She's real. Yeah, she's like
88 goddamn popsicles. Try this. It's water.
Yeah, Berenstain Bears and Too Much TV, and wouldn't mm-hmm. you know it,
yeah.
Sister Bear and Brother Bear and Papa Bear are watching too much TV, and old Mama Bear is not happy about that.
Mm.
Berenstain Bears computer trouble. So this goes up quite some time. Yeah.
Wow.
And Mama Bear is not having it. She's a Luddite.
Jeez.
Like, computers, not in my hollowed out tree. Tell me what.
Berenstain Bears and social distancing.
Jesus.
Yeah. Howdy's in the bed, and he looks over at Dimmy, and he's like, "What's that?" And Dimmy says, "Try this. It's called water." Okay, yeah. Back to Dimmy's face, like this big-eyed, right, big-pupiled
right.
Look that he's giving us, right? And yeah, so like that is what I'm seeing on Dimmy's face right now, right? He is afraid, yes, uh-huh. but it's not the Abbott and Costello like Bert Lahr cowardly lion, like you know, like that thing, right? That he was giving us like before at the beginning of this exorcism. Like
right.
I said, this is him beholding something. This is the face that Bible characters make when, you know, the angel comes and says to them, "Be not afraid."
Mm-hmm. Right. And he says, "Let me at him. Let me at him.
Let me at him. Let me at him. I'll tear that King Herod apart." Oh, I don't know, fellas. I don't know if I want to see God today.
So then the wizard gives the Tin Man an oil can, right? And gives that's not right. Okay. He gives the Tin Man a heart.
I said uh-huh.
And you're like, yeah.
I'm an idiot.
No, I Mandela affected you. I just did it to you. Like, oh, at the end he gets at the first scene he gets an oil can, and the last
yes.
scene he gets a heart, a clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Scarecrow gets a diploma.
Right.
And the Tin Man, he's like, "Oh, I'm just so afraid all the time."
No, the lion.
Oh my God, the lion. That part you'll have to cut out. That joke will make
sense.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Right. And then the lion is like, I'm just so cowardly all the time, so afraid. And he goes, "Well, I know what you need, lion. This is some scripture. You're never supposed to be afraid if you have the Lord on your side." Oh, I could fight anybody now. I could go up against Goliath and the Philistines with the Lord.
But lion, you're also supposed to fear the Lord. He didn't solve his problem at all. But yeah, so now we cut back and we are once again that third priest on the other side of the bed, mm-hmm. opposite of Merrin. Merrin is still standing as he continues. He says, "In the unity of the Holy Spirit, God forever and ever." And Howdy's moaning and shouting has changed. These grunts and struggling noises are actually quieter. He's no longer bellowing. It sounds like he's either losing his grip or he's regaining his grip, and based on what we see next, so we cut and we're back behind Dimmy, but I think this is a new angle. I almost want to call it an under the shoulder?
Well, I don't know. It's like you see the entirety of Damien's body, but yeah, it's pretty low. It's pretty low angle. Yeah.
It's low angle where we're far away, and it's like we're on the other side of the room and we are on the floor, like up against the wall, cowering, right?
Right.
And there's a split
cowering lion, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? I don't know about this girl. She's spitting green soup.
And Freaky just, hold the camera straight, you ass.
Oh, the lion is the cameraman. I know it's a movie, but it's terrifying.
Right, I need you to keep it in your pants. You're going to ruin my fucking shot.
Why is a cameraman dressed as a lion?
You know, we lost Friedkin during the strike, so we didn't get to cover it, but there were all these videos coming about, because we talked about cruising, right, when we were talking about Paul Bateson, right? And so there's this great clip of this reporter, this French reporter saying like, oh, you know, Al Pacino and you have different ideas about how cruising turned out. You know, you say cruising turned out well, Al Pacino says it didn't turn out well, and Friedkin says, I don't give a flying fuck through a rolling donut what Al Pacino thinks. Does that answer your question? Yes, very much.
Oh my God, Billy. I have to put that in my phrase book now. I don't give a flying fuck through a rolling donut.
That's right.
I love that. That's how I'm going to keep Billy alive. I'm just going to say that now.
Yes, yes. We lost a great director. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a great collaborator, but a great director.
Yes.
And a great cusser.
Oh, yeah. It's cussing up a storm. But yeah, so like I said, we're like on the floor on the other side of the room and we're cowering and we're behind Dimmy. And there is this split second of silence, almost like the moment before a sacred act. It's like this reverence. And then two things happen at almost the same time. Damien says, amen. And the bed begins to levitate. Mm-hmm. Marin says, Lord, hear my prayer. And from the bed, we can now hear Lucille Laverne again, the hag from Snow White. And she is laugh sobbing. Mm-hmm. And this one didn't strike me as sensual, but it's still deeply disturbing. It really does sound like if you walked in on your grandmother crying.
Yeah.
I mean, like, really in the throes of, like, some deep sorrow, some deep pain. Or your grandmother is slowly going crazy, and this is, like, the beginning of a laugh. Mm. It's not a sound any grandchild should ever, ever hear.
Yeah, that's – Mercedes McCambridge is doing some, like, amazing stuff. Yeah, you know, it's like she is – the bed starts to raise up in the previous shot, actually, but it's not, you know, where we have Marin giving this prayer over her. Right. It starts to raise up, but it's like it's so subtle that we don't necessarily notice it, and it feels like the characters don't even notice it, right? Mm. And it's like she is, it's like she is quieting down because she has to focus, or maybe the opposite, like she is. She is like receding or losing or something, and like this bed levitation is like an expression of that. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it like there are moments in this minute and in future minutes of this exorcism where stuff happens, and I'm unsure whether it is a result of Howdy losing or of him winning, and. I want to touch on each of them as they come up, but so you're saying, Keenan, you're not sure about like with the bed floating, you don't know if this is Howdy or maybe God, or maybe it's just like, maybe the floating bed is just produced from the struggle. It's like a byproduct of like the energy
response,
is like,
right. Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
I don't know if I see God in this movie at all, which I guess might be sacrilegious, I suppose. Right? I don't think that this is the hand of God coming in and helping them slightly, but not all the way. I don't know about that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you in that. Like, I don't see a God in the way that our demon is represented, like an actual other character. Right. I can see him working through Karis and through Marin and through Chris.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like you said, like I don't see him performing miracles the way that, you know, Howdy is performing these anti-miracles.
Yeah, I don't see the finger of God, you know, manifesting and doing things. Mm. But yeah, like I think I would like to take Marin's advice, which is like any of these manifestations where it's pretending it's weak, it's pretending it's losing, et cetera, like don't trust any of those. Right. But I think I would be hard pressed to, because sometimes it feels like, oh yes, this demon is really writhing around. It is like your grandmother in pain, like you're saying, and that must mean something. And Marin is like, none of this means anything. Like, we have to keep focused on what's actually going on. And like, we have to do the ritual until this is over and not think like, oh, okay, this is working. This is, this is doing something. Cause that's dangerous. Whether that's true or not, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
To like track, we're two steps forward, one step back, or we're 3 points behind, or any sort of measure of that whatsoever. Or, hey, that part of the ritual seemed to really do something to it. So that's the key part we have to focus on. And Marin is the one who's like, no. Like none of that. No scoreboard. We just have to keep doing this until it's done.
Yeah. It's like trying to rationalize as you're walking like a tightrope across like a chasm, you know, and your guide is like just keep walking and don't look down. And it's like, but if I look down, maybe I can see how far we've gone, or you know, how far it will be if I fall. And it's like, right. No, just don't do that. Don't do any of that.
That step was going really well. So I'm really good at this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm really good at my left foot, not my right foot. And like, no, just one step at a time.
I should look at the tops of the trees to see if there's any wind happening. No. Yeah. So yeah, folks, write in. Tell us if you think the bed is a product of Howdy winning or Howdy losing, or if it's just like, I don't know, like being moved because like Howdy's will and Marin's will are like bouncing off of each other and moving things or whatever.
Oh, well, here's another question that just occurred to me, because later on she's going to be floating without her straps.
Right.
So here, is she levitating herself, and just because she's attached to the bed's going with her, or is she levitating the bed? I don't know if that actually matters.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference about those things? But yeah, the effect is that they're levitating together. But
Right.
But I guess, is she flying or is she poltergeisting the bed?
Right. That's a good question. I mean, we know like the special effects is like there's like a forklift behind,
right,
you know,
so
the wall.
Has Captain Howdy hired a forklift operator who's in the bathroom and has and has some stilts that are lifting this up? Is that what's going on?
That's his his magic right there, is like he can get anybody to do a favor for him. Yeah. No. But no, what I mean is the effect is on the bed.
Right.
So I think if they wanted to make it look like it's Reagan pulling the bed up as she's levitating, they would do something. They would like have her rise up a little bit and have the straps like get taut.
Yeah, they could do that, right?
Yeah, and then the bed would start to like rise up like with her.
Yeah.
So I think because of the way that the effect is created, I think with like diegetically in the story, it's supposed to be that she's levitating the bed.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay, so from here, we cut to another close-up of Dimmy as Marin says, Father Karis. And I think this is a continuation of that last close-up, edging out of awe and into fear. It's gone from, if the devil is real, then God must be too, to, oh God, the devil is real. What do you think, Keenan?
Yeah, I think absolutely. We've sort of been waiting for this to happen. I think we could isolate like this exact moment. This is the time when it's happening.
Right. So, of him like believing, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. Because that previous shot, is of wonder. And then we're reminded when we go to this more objective shot, like, yes, great. Good for you and your personal journey to me and right. everything that means about you and your mother and you and Father Dyer and whatever. But like, yeah, but here we are. Yep. We're in this room.
Yeah. Also devil. Yeah.
Also devil. ... devil.
Yeah. But like this part of Karis's faith journey always fascinated me. It's such a weird juxtaposition of elation and horror. Mm-hmm. The existence of the devil being proof of the existence of God. And we've seen all throughout the story, there have been times when it looks like Dimmy's going to witness an honest-to-God miracle. Mm-hmm. And then Howdy snatches it away because right. he knows that would actually feed Dimmy's soul, right? Mm-hmm. But here it looks like Dimmy is getting exactly what he wished for, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, be careful what you wish for. And he is more than a little terrified. It's like you say, Keenan, it's like in his mind, he is like jumping for joy for a split second. He's like, mm-hmm. oh my God, the devil is real. That means God is, wait, the devil is real.
But then at the same time, there is this, like he's going through all of this bouillé inside of his head, but there right. is the, what the acting teacher Sanford Meisner calls the independent activity going on. Mm. Right. So like, I don't know, my teacher would call it like business, like the business you're doing, right? Uh-huh. But it's Meisner's point of like, okay, so we're going to have this monologue or the scene between you and the other actor. And what is an independent activity that would sort of ground you? And make you sort of focus on the reality of the situation and right. get you out of your head, where as an actor, you're like, well, I'm going to do all this actorly things to my scene partner. But no, what does it mean when you are untangling a kite string? I'm looking at a yes. list here. Opening a coconut without tools. Mm-hmm. What do we have here? Carving a pumpkin. Lifting weights. So that's for you, Lester.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Braiding hair. Like, what is it when it's all that? And like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you are so focused on that activity, you have to choose when you're going to make your big revelations, you know, and have your moments or whatever, right. you know? And so he is having this relationship with Howdy here, but he's supposed to be helping Father Marin, right?
Yes.
Do the Rome ritual. So yeah, it's well and good that you're doing all of this, you know, personal stuff over here. But yeah, your independent activity, as Meisner would call it, is to do the Rome ritual. And so where are you, yes. Father Karis? Pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And because we are watching Dimmy and we are with Dimmy, we are Dimmy at this moment, mm-hmm. we also kind of like lose track of everything, mm-hmm. right? Because we see Dimmy's face and we're like, oh, right? And then Marin wakes both of us, all of us right. up, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's waking up Karis, but he's waking up us too, right? He says, Father Karis. And then we cut to a close-up of Marin as he sort of looks up questioningly and says again, Father Karis. What do we make of this look up that Marin does here? It's almost like he was like deep in the flow of the exorcism and now he's like waking from a dream or snapping out of it when he realizes Dimmy hasn't responded.
Yeah, that he could be losing Dimmy in this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, he's only met Damien, you know, for two half minute meetings.
Yeah, exactly.
They've met at the bottom of the stairs. They've met in Daddy's room. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, okay, I thought we were on the same page. Right. Like, mm-hmm. I look at you. Clearly you are, we're saying that Marin is an empathetic person. Like, yes. I look at you. Clearly you got things going on. But when I ask you, you know, at the front of your brain, you're like, yes, I can do this. And we agree on how to do this. And you know their own ritual and you're an expert in the occult and black mass and you're a learned person. So this is like the first time I think where we see where Marin is like, oh, Damien might be a liability here. Right. Like, are you with me here? Because you could lose the assistant. The assistant could die even, is the devil beating the assistant to such a pulp that he can't even say the call and response. And again, as we were talking about last minute, the Roman ritual says that it is a group effort. It is call and anybody in the room has to participate. If you're not participating, you're getting, you're not just not helping, you're hurting the ritual.
Right. And actually, I think it says it on the x-ray, but I had heard this a little bit before as well. This is usually not how a typical actual exorcism is supposed to go. There is supposed to be, it is strongly recommended that there be other people in the room as well, specifically a member of the family of the same sex as the victim. So Chris should be in there.
Chris should be in there, yeah.
Yeah. And also a doctor, like an actual doctor present. Right. Now, I guess, you know, Dimmy fills both of those roles. Mm-hmm. because he is a doctor as well.
Right.
But yeah, so this movie exorcism is a little bit different from how an exorcism is actually supposed to go.
Right. But you know, that part of it is accurate in the requel, The Believer.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think we're the only ones who say like that is just less dramatic.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. It's less dramatic. We have like eight people in that room and they all have their little jobs. And so, yeah, if one of them falls down, the rest of them can help. Like, sure, that's great.
Mm-hmm,
but that is less dramatic.
Yes, it is. And I said before, I think I really do like in this movie, them going in there alone.
Yeah.
I like that.
I was hearing today someone talking about that when you have the more people in a choir you have holding a note, the longer the note can hold. But it's because what it really is that each person is taking their individual breaths when they need to, but there are so many voices that you can't hear them, you know? And so, yeah, that's what the exorcism is, I'm sure, supposed to be like, right? So if Damien isn't on his A game or Maren's not or Chris isn't, then there's someone there who could do all these things. But
right,
that's just making it, you know, too easy on our heroes.
Yeah,
we want
yeah.
them to struggle through all this and yeah. do it the wrong way.
And this is, I mean, like it's appropriate for Dimmy and Maren. Maren has a history with this demon. Mm-hmm. So this is like, you know, the final showdown. This is like a rematch. And, you know, Dimmy has a relationship with this demon through his nightmares,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and I'm not just talking about like the literal nightmare he has, but this is, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit further down the page, but I think Howdy fits with Dimmy thematically.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, in the prequel where they go through, there's two prequels where they go through what Maren had done in Africa that almost killed him.
Right.
That yeah, there's teams, but by the end of it, they kind of get whittled away, and then he's doing the bulk of the exorcism by himself.
Right.
So yeah. So that's even more dramatic. It's just one of them as opposed to an old priest and a young priest.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, Maren has looked up because he hasn't gotten a response from Karis.
Mm-hmm.
And from here, we cut back to Dimmy. And we're a little bit farther away so that we get the full effect of just his face over this floating bed.
Yeah.
He's
looking smaller, right?
He is much, much smaller.
Right.
And he looks frozen with fear now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I said earlier, Maren reminds me of a living statue. Here, it looks like the reverse. It looks like someone turned Dimmy into stone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Maren calls out again, and this time he uses Dimmy's first name. He says, Damien, right? And we cut, and we are behind Karis again as Maren tries to reach him. He says, the response, please, Damien.
Mm-hmm. And then Damien kind of, he's like, I'm sorry, we were saying the Lord's Prayer? And Maren says, that was 15 minutes ago.
I'm sorry, we were talking about the Berenstain Bears? No!
Yeah, but it does feel like doesn't it feel, even though we're talking about, you know, 10 seconds, it feels like he's frozen forever, right? And it has all this intensity, like, Jesus, Damien, get your head in the game.
Yeah, it is, but it's like that, you were talking about, you know, we talked about like fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that little animal that all it knows how to do in the face of this predator is just kind of like groom itself
to comfort itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is Dimmy right now. He is this like not even a deer in headlights. He is like a little, like a smaller animal, like who is about to be swallowed up.
Oh, jeez.
And yeah. But yeah, Maren has to snap him out of it. He says, the response, please, Damien.
Mm.
And then we get another cut and we are closer on Dimmy's face, but it is getting swallowed up.
Mm-hmm.
By this bed, as if Dimmy is sinking, as if he is drowning in his own fear,
right?
Which makes his next line, "And let my cry come unto thee," very appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hear somebody, hear me as I'm drowning, right?
It is the bed is coming up, so it's a close up of Damien. It's framed that way, but then the bed has come up, so it's covering his mouth, and it's like his nose is barely above the water. I like that analogy, Lester.
And it's. And yes, his line, "and let my cry come unto thee," is a response to Maren's line, but I also like how it fits with this imagery of him drowning.
Right.
We get another cut, and we are back on the other side of that bed, opposite Maren. The bed is now bucking and rocking as Maren says, "Almighty Lord, Word of God the Father, Jesus Christ, God and Lord of all creation." He throws some holy water onto Reagan, and at this, the bed drops.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, it crashes back down to the floor, and the screen goes black. And before we know what's happening, a bunch of things happen all at once. We realize we have cut again, and we are on a close-up of Reagan slash Howdy. And it really does feel appropriate to say that here, because we see Reagan thrashing in the bed as the light goes on and off. And you really do get the sense that she and Howdy are flickering in and out of control mm-hmm. of the body. We hear Marin's voice as he continues. He says, "Who gave to your only apostles the power to trample underfoot serpents and scorpions." We then hear a sound from the demon, this roar mixed with a scream, which also sounds like breaking glass or metal scraping against metal. And it also, to me, sounds like the call of a panther. Like, I actually took time and I went on YouTube and I listened to all of the big cats' roars. And this one sounds like a panther. Like, guys, go and listen to what a panther sounds like. And it's like, it's wow, you know, it's that type of thing. And it sounds like somebody took that and like elongated it and mixed it with metal and glass and somebody screamed. And then at the mention of serpents and scorpions, Howdy appears. His actual face floats up to the surface and emerges to stare at Marin. Keenan, this is another rare Howdy sighting. What do we make of this one? Like, what is going on in that face? Is he winning? Is he losing? Is he looking at Marin with hate? Is he begging for mercy? Is it a pleading look on his face? Is it more sensuality? Is he loving all of this? What is going on?
It's weird. So again, I want to steel myself against the evidence of my eyes and ears and and agree with Marin that this doesn't mean anything, but it does really look like he is hurting and pleading with Marin to stop, doesn't it?
Is that what you get
from that?
That was my first inclination to like, he is like please stop, you know, like something like that, right?
Yeah, and it's so interesting. It's the Eileen Dietz face, and yeah, it looks different. It has a different emotionality than we've seen any other ones. The other ones kind of are like, you know, I don't know what intention Eileen Dietz is playing or what Friedkin had asked her, but it really is kind of like, you know, your intention is booga booga, right? It's like, it's like, just look scary, right? And literally, or, you know, hunger or something like that. Yeah,
exactly.
But yeah, this one does look incredibly different. It looks like it is worried or it is sad even. And it's an angle, right? So far we've seen Eileen Dietz with her head basically straight up and down, strong and erect and attentive. And this one is matching Reagan on the bed, sort of leaning and throwing herself around. And then, you know, what's really interesting. So we're talking about, okay, this feels like Reagan Howdy sort of switching on and off in the dark, right?
Yeah.
There's only one flash of Howdy.
Right.
And it is 6 frames long. So like this tiny little bit of Howdy goes a long way. So it is 6 frames long. So, you know, a fourth of a second long. Wait, is that right?
Yeah.
6 times 4 is 24. Yes. A fourth of a second long. And it really impacts us. We don't need a lot of it here to make it feel like Howdy is there and Howdy is coming out.
Right. And I don't know. I always love, you know, when the mask falls off in these types of stories. Like, you get to see, you know, the monster's true face, right?
Right.
And this is, you know, it's like, this is the thing that has been talking to Marin and Karis the whole time, right? And we, you know, it's been using Reagan's face and Reagan's body, but like, this is actually Howdy. At least that's how I interpret it. And no, yeah, Keenan, you're exactly right. Like, in this moment, for me, I can only see this as Howdy is on the ropes. As you put it a couple of minutes ago, he's got his tongue out, but I don't think that's on purpose. I don't think he's, you know, he's doing what he's going to be doing in a second.
Right.
I don't think he's being obscene. I feel like the tongue is out because he's dying, for lack of a better word.
Right.
I think he is in terrible pain. I think he's losing his grip. And like an animal, his tongue is just kind of hanging out of his mouth. And you see in his eyes, like if you ignore the teeth for a second, you can read the expression is in his eyes as pleading. Like he's saying, like, please stop. Please don't send us away. Please don't say the name of God again. Please have mercy. Right. And it, you know, it reminds me of the Legion story again, right? Because the, you know, the the possessed man, you know, with Legion inside him, you know, falls to Jesus's feet and says, I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Please don't send us away. Send mm-hmm. us into those pigs. This is the big scary thing of this movie, you know, but he is begging
yeah.
for mercy. You know, he's begging Merrin, you know, to be merciful. And it's just, it's a weird feeling that you get because like he's the big scary thing, but like he is not in control right now. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I don't know if we actually read as much into it as when we're doing it this way, because it's also just, you know, when Howdy emerges, it's terrifying to us, right?
Yes.
So even when Howdy is like, you know, when you look at the actual performance, it's there in that shot with Eileen Dietz, it is pitiful, right?
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, from Karis's point of view, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes. Terrifying. Yeah. And I want to talk about that, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think for us and for Karis, like for when I say us, I mean like, you know, normal people who watch the movie and don't, you know, do this minute by minute thing.
Right.
But like, I think, you know, the audience and Karis have kind of a similar reaction. Mm-hmm. They're not catching this, like, you know, pitiful expression on Howdy's face. They're just like, oh, it's Howdy, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
But like, I want to hold on this okay. face for a little bit longer. If we look at these teeth, and the lips are drawn back, exposing the teeth in what I can read as a snarl mm-hmm. of defiance, like almost like he says, like, is that all you got?
Uh-huh.
Right. I'm playing devil's advocate here, right? I personally believe it's a pitiful expression, but yeah. like, you know, what if it's not, right?
Right.
And then if you stare at it long enough, which I often do right before bed, you can also maybe see a smile, mm-hmm. especially because the eyes are sort of half closed. And folks, like when you smile, your whole face changes, right? Like, mm-hmm. like during the height of the pandemic, when everyone was wearing a mask, we could still read a smile in someone's eyes,
right.
because your eyes kind of like scrunch up, your cheeks sort of like push up and squish the top part of your face. And that's what I think when I hear the phrase like, oh, there was a smile in his eyes, mm-hmm. right? You can actually see this in Max von Sydow's performance, right? There are moments like when he tells the grandpa joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
That his eyes are smiling more than his mouth, right? And then conversely, we have all seen someone who is wearing a fake smile mm-hmm. because it doesn't go up to their eyes. It stops at the mouth, and in the eyes you see, I don't know, anger or boredom or disdain or fear. And here on Howdy's face, I don't know, like his eyes are squinting. So it's not a fake smile, if it is a smile, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I would be remiss here, Lester, to, uh-huh. to not point out also that Tyra Banks' advice to the modeling community is to smize, which is to smile with your eyes, even if your lips aren't smiling. So that's one of the things she makes the contestants on America's Not Top Model work on. Yeah, to smize. So still like, yeah, you know, completely serious mouth. Everything below the nose is serious and, you know, model sexy, but that you're smiling with the eyes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now I'm gonna be looking in the mirror, trying to smize.
Smize.
Right?
Give me a smize.
People coming into the work bathroom and they're just like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm smizing. Go away.
Or I'm trying to.
I'm trying to smize, but I was interrupted. I'm sorry. I mean, how are you today? Which is a big old fake smile. Yeah. But oh yeah, like speaking of fake smiles, right? So it could also be a snarl.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we were like comparing Howdy to an ape, right? We called him the Monkey King,
yeah.
actually,
mm-hmm.
right? And it made me think like when chimpanzees smile,
mm-hmm.
do you know about this? When they smile, it's not because they're happy. It's a threat.
Yeah,
they are showing their teeth.
Mm-hmm.
But we are so used to seeing it as a friendly sign because, mm-hmm. you know, because of our conditioning. But then actually, speaking of conditioning, we will bare our teeth. Humans will do this as a threat. Like someone makes a joke at your expense at a party and we respond with this like toothy grin. We're like, ah, that's so funny, you asshole, you son of a bitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I feel like any one of those things could be happening on Howdy's face right now. I personally like to think that he is on the ropes and he is begging Marin for mercy. But from there, we cut, and it looks like we are the third priest again on the side of the bed, and we see the rest of Dimmy now as he stands at the foot of the bed, because the bed is on the floor again, and it's no longer hiding him, but it almost feels like he's still frozen in the pose from when the bed was floating. Like, he's got his arms and his shoulders up, like the book is held high, as if he's still dealing with the bed being there. Like, you know what I mean?
As if he's still drowning.
Exactly. As if he's still drowning
in bed, right?
Yeah, right? It's almost like the bed just fell away, and he hasn't been able to, like, adjust his body yet. And it's so quick, but we see that Dimmy has caught sight of that face, of the Captain Howdy face. You see him turn before it goes black again, before it cuts. But folks, this time, it's not one of those comedy looks. Go back and find this split second shot if you can. This is, I think, the youngest we have seen Dimmy in this movie, and he looks terrified. But it's like a terror that's not even fully blossomed on his face. Like, he's too young for the terror that he is experiencing. You feel so bad for him, this little boy, this like a little boy, like 5 years old, who is remembering a face he saw in a dream that he thought he had forgotten. Like, the earlier scared shots of Dimmy, like, we're unconsciously comparing him to Marin, and we're like, ah, this guy's in over his head, right? But here, you not only sympathize, you empathize. It's like this child has just learned that the boogeyman is real. It was under his bed that one time. It was in his closet that one time. It was watching him, and he can't hide behind, oh, there's no such thing as the boogeyman. He can't hide behind, I think I've lost my faith, Tom. That was his safe place.
Right.
It was a sad place, but it was safe. Like, what do you think, Keenan?
Yeah, that's really interesting. See, I mean, he looks teeny tiny. He looks terrified and scared. And I don't know. To me, it also feels a little bit like, you know, all this stuff is going on in his head, and he can't tell Marin about it. Like, it's even like he's hiding from Marin, right? Like, like he can't be like, oh, Father Marin, I just saw this face from my dream, right? Which is what's literally happening. He's seen this face before, and now he's like, oh, that's the face from my dream. And, you know, but Marin has now admonished him twice now, right?
Yes.
Like, outside in Daddy's room about, like, why are we doing, you know, why do you want me to know about the three different manifestations of this, right?
Right, right.
And then now here where, oh, I'm falling behind in my call and response. So, because what does he want? He wants to be like, you know, Father Marin, stop. I have more information to tell you, you know, about this. Like, I've been here before. It's deja vu in some respect, right? And so it seems like he's more terrified of the demon, I think, obviously. But it's sort of this triangle, right? He can look at Howdy, and that's no good. And he can't look at Marin, and that's not helpful either.
Right. I feel like with the appearance of Howdy, he is more alone than ever.
Yeah.
It's because he has to be a good exorcist for Marin. He has to be a good son for a father, right?
Right.
And so, you know, no more messing up, no more, distractions.
Right.
And then your nightmare comes back and says, hey, like, remember me?
Yeah.
Little boy. And he's like, ah, shit. Like, I can't tell Dad about this.
Right. He's like, hey, Father Marin, you ever have a deja vu? But it, like, feels really, really real. Or even, did you see that? And Marin's like, what are you talking about? See what? Right. It's all illusionary. It's all illusory. Yeah. Sorry.
Whether he knows that no response from Marin will be good.
Yeah.
Right. Whether he is like, no, I didn't see anything, like, you're crazy.
Right.
Which is like what he's afraid everyone is going to say to him.
Right.
Or, you know, because Marin's on the level, he knows it's a demon. He's going to say, yeah, you probably saw something. Ignore it.
Right.
You're an exorcist.
I'm seeing all sorts of stuff over here. I'm not sharing it with you and was slowing us down, wasting our time.
Exactly. I saw Bert Lahr's face over here. What do you want?
What do you want from me, right? Let's see. So he's like, he's, I'm trying to think of the age. So he's like 1910 or yeah. Yeah. He's like, he saw Kaiser Wilhelm. He's like, yeah. 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 Kaiser Wilhelm's over here telling me I'm going to start World War II, World War One. Yeah. So we're all having a day, Damien.
I saw Kaiser Wilhelm, but like the little spike wasn't coming out of his helmet. It was just his head.
Oh, God. It's terrifying.
You're lucky you just get like a creepy white face.
Why, Lancaster? Why you start World War One? why you start World War One, Lancaster?
Why you assassinate Archduke Franz Ferdinand?
Yeah. Why, Lanny? Why?
Lanny. Why you leave us in the trenches? Why the mustard gas? Why?
Why? Why? It's all quiet on the Western Front.
You know, and that one Christmas Eve, that was really nice.
That was really nice. Yeah.
And you just hear Demi's voice, Father Mann? Father Mann? And even Howdy's like, are you okay? Like,
okay.
Like, we can take a break. It's totally fine.
Like,
I was just flashing my white face over to you know, Demi over right. there. But, you know, you look like you need to sit down.
You need to sit down. And Marin's like, I saw you as Kaiser Wilhelm. And Howdy's just like, who the fuck is Kaiser Wilhelm?
You got to remember, I've been away for a really long time.
Right.
How many times have you tried to kill each other? Like, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. No. Like, in all seriousness, mm-hmm. It's such a quick cut, and maybe nobody else is like thinking too much of it. Mm-hmm. But I love that face on Demi of like a little boy who has seen his nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that. And I think that's the thing that makes Howdy personal to him. Mm-hmm. So Howdy is already personal to Marin, but now Howdy is personal to him. Like
right.
He was like, I'm the guy in your dream.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So from this very quick shot, the screen goes black again, and we have cut, and we are now with Marin. It is a close-up on his face. The first glimpse we see of him in this new shot is his face emerging from that transitional darkness, mm-hmm. and his face is bathed in white light, his breath coming out in white clouds, and he is looking up and out. He's not looking straight up, mm-hmm. but he's not looking at the book or at Karis or at Howdy.
Right.
He does not have his head bowed in prayer. He is, I imagine, looking at God, seeking God in this room, calling upon God. And he says, grant me your unworthy servant. And at the next word, pardon, we cut, and it's a close-up of Reagan/Howdy.
Mm-hmm.
He is sitting up. And I think this right here is the movie version of one of my favorite parts of the book, because what Marin is trying to say here is, grant me your unworthy servant pardon for all my sins. And here in the movie, Howdy cuts him off with bastard, scum. And I can't be sure because events are a little switched around, but if this is the movie analog of that scene I'm thinking of in the book, this is when Howdy loses it.
Mm-hmm.
He is so angry. He is so offended that Marin is acting humble. It's like, I think I said it before, it's how dare you pretend to be good?
Mm-hmm.
And that always struck me. Folks, in the run of this show, we have been lucky enough to take some time and dip into the history of the devil and the various roles that the devil has played throughout his evolution as a biblical character. And this moment in the book takes me all the way back to one of the first mentions of Satan, maybe the first mention of Satan back in the book of Job when he was the Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Lowercase s Satan. And he was the prosecuting attorney in God's court. He was the accuser, but it was the original meaning of that word. And here in this part of our story, The Exorcist, it almost seems as if Howdy is speaking on God's behalf, and he is angry for God at this unworthy human. He's like, how dare you speak God's name? How dare you stand there and ask for his help? You, Lancaster Merrin, who thought himself so high, so smart, so above his peers, you come in here, you're dressed like a priest, and you're talking about humble this and unworthy that. You don't know the first thing about humility, and now you're lying to God's face. How dare you? And I know this is an interpretation you can only get from reading the book and maybe being a little psycho like me. But I wanted to mention it here, even though I don't know if we get any of that from this little exchange in the movie. Keenan, how do you read Howdy's curses here? Is it just him cursing? Is he angry that Merrin is hurting him and doing the exorcism? Or is he angry at Merrin's pretense, his hypocrisy?
Yeah, I didn't pick up on those things that you're talking about. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think you are benefiting from your encyclopedic knowledge of the book, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For me, what's really interesting about this moment is that we haven't seen Reagan/Howdy recovering into this state. But yeah, you're saying she's sitting up. Right. We don't even get a sense of the straps. Literally, she's still strapped down, right?
Right.
But she's like sitting straight up. So something that has just happened, which is, probably what Merrin has done, because Karis hasn't done anything. Right? So probably something that Merrin has just done in this part of the ritual has triggered this like power snap in her, where she's like, oh, you know what, put this bed down, right? Yeah. And I'm gonna be, my real face for a second. And then when you aren't looking, I'm standing straight up again. And like I am at least powerful enough to be to deliver cogent semi-sentences again. Right. So something has happened here. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if it is exactly what you're talking about, as they say in the book, where Merrin is in the ritual.
Mm-hmm. Not knowing the relationship of Howdy and Merrin from the book, and not kind of like, building this character of Howdy being offended by Merrin. If we don't know any of that stuff, if we haven't read the book, if this is like the first time we've seen the movie, what is going on with Howdy right now? Is he like genuinely angry at Merrin for something, or is this like more trickery? Is he just calling Merrin names?
Right. I think if you don't have any of that stuff from the book, then this is just like, oh, this is starting to work or something, and I'm really pissed off at that, and I'm like trying through all of these different tactics to just stop this exorcism, right?
Okay.
So it's weird, because it's a little bit of a reversal to where Howdy was at the beginning of the scene, right?
Right.
But it doesn't feel like a regression to me. Maybe it's because of this lighting change and all of this, right? It feels like we're moving forward.
Yeah. Mm. So, folks, whatever the case, however you decide to read this, we cut as Merrin is still speaking. I like that. Mm-hmm. Again, Howdy is not affecting Merrin's prayer at all. Mm-hmm. Merrin just keeps going. We don't know what Merrin feels inside, because he's a statue, like we said. He is a stone statue with a heart, and Howdy's curses are just like hail pebbles bouncing off of him. Mm-hmm. And as if to drive this home, we now cut to Dimmy, who we see is affected. Merrin is a statue, but Dimmy is human. Mm-hmm. And we see this in the wetness on his face. We see it in his eyes, which are still very big. But now, from that last shot a couple seconds ago, when he looked like a 5-year-old, he has aged significantly. He is now 50, 60, 70 years old, looking at Marley's ghost, looking at the devil, looking at his sins and his wasted life. Merrin is over there saying, grant me, your unworthy servant, pardon for all my sins. And now we're looking at Dimmy, while those words still ring in our and his ears. Mm-hmm. We cut from there. Again, folks, this is all so quick. Each of these shots is like a second long, if that. So much is happening in these shots, but it's so fast we barely have time to register. And it might only be reaching us on a subliminal level. I've never actually had to put into words what's going on here. But Merrin continues. He says, and the power to confront this cruel demon. And now we are behind Dimmy as he confronts Howdy, who is sitting up, leaning forward, his tongue going in and out like a snake, but much lewder than a snake. He's got this like raspy breathing and his like, you know, sounds to go with it. Blatty compares him to a cobra at points. And I think this is supposed to be referencing one of those moments with her like sitting upright. Mm-hmm. But it's not what a snake does. It's much more obscene, which I think is better for the movie. Again, we talked about how, you know, some of Blatty's imagery and his dialogue work really well on the page, but if you tried to replicate it, it would look kind of goofy. Like, can you imagine Reagan actually like acting like a snake? It would be kind of silly, right?
Yeah, the snake comparison only goes so far, right? Because mm-hmm. the tongue does not look like a snake. It doesn't look like a human tongue. It's not. It's not Reagan's tongue. It's not a snake's tongue. It's like distinctly Howdy's tongue coming out of nowhere. And again, like that reminds me of when you watch the movie, you don't necessarily know that the desecration is clay. It feels like it is magic that's come into the world and destroyed things, right? Like something has happened to Reagan's tongue. That's not her tongue. Right. It's not a snake tongue. It is not like a snake tongue. A snake's tongue is there to smell you and primarily, and then somewhat to taste you. This is like not that. It's yeah, you like you're saying, it's not as sexual. Like it's hard to say that sexual either. Like it's like, what is this? It's like, it's not like snakes. It's not like people. It's just bothersome on this really weird. Yeah, I think crude is there.
I think
not sexual for some reason, but yeah, it's like there aren't words to describe what Captain Audi's trying to do with his tongue.
The only word that keeps floating up to my mind is obscene.
Mm-hmm.
But like in every sense of the word, just like to its primal like origin of that word. It's just like even like bordering on blasphemous, right?
Yeah.
It's just this crude, gross, rude, like obscene is the word that I'm, coming to. Because, you're right. Like a snake's tongue is like, it's flat, it's mm-hmm. small, it's forked, and it's used, and it's quiet, which is the opposite. It, like, it's all the opposites of this, right?
Right. Yeah, it's just like unnecessary, right?
Yes.
Like it's not to do anything except take up our time and bother us.
Yeah.
Like a snake is smelling you and sensing you. Mm-hmm. A sexual tongue is there to arouse you or to, you know, signal interest. This is none of those things.
No.
Just, obscene. You said irreverent. So I was thinking irrelevant. It's like mm-hmm. unnecessary. Like the middle school teacher would be like, unnecessary, Miss McNeil, right? We don't need to be doing that. So let's not do that.
Yeah. But I mean, like, and that sounds silly, but like it is. That signifies Howdy being on the ropes. Like he's trying everything. He's just throwing everything against the wall. And it also just like, it's this lack of respect for the ritual. It's like, this is what I think of like all of your, you know, like praying and blah, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. And folks, this right here, this gross, irreverent, obscene action, this 3-second clip is where the parody version of Howdy comes from.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the parody version of Chris, right? And that comes from, you know, boiling Ellen Burstyn's entire performance down to, you know, the one or two times she was, emotional, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is that for Howdy. This is where, Keenan, this is where we get the voice of our Captain Howdy character on our show, right? Like every time we talk like this, blah, you know,
right.
Like this, 3-second clip right here of Reagan / Howdy going, you know, like that thing. Without this 3-second clip, all the parodies would be different. Without this, Michael Keaton's Beetlejuice would be different.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Because I'm sure he saw this, right? I mean, he's seen it 167 times and it keeps getting funnier. That is this 3 seconds of this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
His whole character is based on this little part, right?
Right.
This is Howdy being irreverent, gross, crude, and scary.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, before we can even fully register it, it's gone. And we're back on Dimmy's face. And now Howdy is confronting him. I feel like Dimmy's expression has changed. Going back to, you know, the cobra metaphor, it feels like Dimmy has frozen. Like he's a mouse. Again, caught mm-hmm. in this cobra's stare. He is hypnotized. We're getting back to, you know, this hypnotism theme. And he cannot turn away. It's a little different from before. Before, he was beholding something. Now, instead of beholding, he's mm-hmm. being held.
Yeah, there's something going on here where he's a little bit out of focus. He's a little bit soft.
Uh-huh.
So we're really close to him, but we're off angle. We have been close, but being able to see both of his eyes equally. So we're sort of out of three quarters. And there's something about it. Like, again, that would be if you handed this shot in to your filmmaking 101 class or something, they might say, oh, that's not correct, right? It's not
right.
It's not right. And I don't know how intentional it is, whether this is something that Roizman, the cinematographer, and Billy Friedkin got, and they're like, okay, well, this works anyways, you know, or whether they were trying to do this. But yeah, it's really interesting that we're sort of seeing Dimmy freeze, as you said, dissociate even a little bit. Like, this is the craziest fucking thing he's ever seen in his life, and he's dissociating, and the camera's kind of dissociating itself from Damien.
Yeah. We get another quick cut, and Reagan slash Howdy slams back down onto the bed. This is interesting because neither of the priests did anything.
Right.
And that makes me wonder, Keenan, what is going on in Reagan? What is Howdy feeling? He shouts, bastard, scum. Then he does the tongue thing at Karis, and then it's almost like whatever's going on is too much for him. Mm-hmm. And he slams back down on the bed, and he tries to, like, shake it off? Like, is he being, like, ripped apart? Is the exorcism affecting him even when the priests aren't speaking?
When, like, aren't, I don't think that can work that way, right? Just, well, logically.
Like instead of the words and the holy water hurting him, is the ritual, like, once the ritual has begun, you know, even when they're not speaking, is it like a slow build? Is he slowly being severed? Or is it
that'd
like,
be like, if you give him a shot and it might take a couple of seconds for it to sort of go on?
Yeah. So, like, is it like taking effect now, right? Like, he's swallowed some medicine, or he's been given a shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, I also imagine because in his backwards speech, he talks about, like, he says, please don't send us from the body into void, right? Mm-hmm. And is it like, is the ritual like opening the door to the void, and he's like feeling the pull and he's trying to resist?
And what, like falling into it?
Or, I think I said this before, is it like the more identity we give to Reagan, right, with her middle name and marking her as a servant of God, the more it physically hurts to be in her?
Well, that's really interesting. It's funny how none of those questions occur to me as I'm watching it in context, right? Because, yeah, like, it just feels right. Like, the way they construct it, even though nothing has happened, it's counterintuitive to how filmmaking should work. It should be that each shot causes the next shot to happen.
Yeah.
But then we have, her falling away or the bed rising. Like, and it's not clear what is causing, what's the causal connection between those things, but it just feels correct.
Yeah, she went from going,
right.
You know, with her tongue
to a shot of Damien, like, going, uh-oh, right.
Yeah, and then him and then, you know, Howdy, like, slamming onto the bed, like, oh my God, it hurts, right?
Yeah, and what caused that? I don't know.
Yeah.
But man, it feels like I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you, Howdy. I feel you, girl.
But yeah, so Howdy's screaming and thrashing, and we cut, and the two priests go back to kneeling. Mm-hmm. We are over Dimmy's shoulder. Howdy's voice has changed again, but we get the feeling, at least I do, that this change is against Howdy's will.
Mm-hmm.
He's not putting on a voice, and this isn't him getting deeper and more demonic to scare them.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a tape player breaking down.
Yeah.
Like the machine is losing power, or the tape is getting warped. Like Reagan's lungs and vocal cords are rejecting Howdy's voice. Like, she's the tape player and his tape is slowing down or getting all tangled up, right? He can't use her like he could before. He no longer has access to her voice. And so it's just this, like, you know, and you hear him struggling with it. There's like a pause and it's quiet. And then, he tries again, like almost like he's drowning now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Marin has crossed himself, and Dimmy notices and quickly crosses himself half a second later. I like that touch. Like he was out of it again, right? He almost forgot to keep up.
Like, he was the Catholic who hasn't been to Mass in a couple of years and notices.
Right? And with your spirit,
your
what?
Spirit. But he also, he also is moving faster as he's crossing himself, like he's trying to catch up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And Marin makes another sign of the cross over Reagan, and the camera begins to move. Mm-hmm. We are panning right. And yes, now we can hear Howdy's labored breathing happening at the same time as that warped tape voice. So we know he is struggling. We get a flash of Reagan slash Howdy's face, and then it is swallowed up by that bedpost as our minute ends. Mm-hmm. We end on a victory, I think. We have won this battle, but the war is not over. And what happens next is anybody's guess. For now, that is all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Diaz. You can find me on Letterboxd and Instagram at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media, and a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate it. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. Okay, Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time, the power of the Berenstain Bears compels you.
Berenstain.
Berenstain. Berenstain. Wait. I thought it was Berenstain.
It sure is.
Wait, no. Those are three different things. There's Berenstain, which forget.
No. That's Frankenstein. Yeah, probably is the Berenstain Bears.
Berenstain.
That's probably what it is.
Because Stein is German for stone, right?
That's right. But yeah, it's the Berenstain, the Berenstain Bears and Too Much TV. Yeah. The Berenstain Bears get the gimmies. The Berenstain Bears host Kaiser Wilhelm.
And Kaiser Wilhelm comes over to the house and he sees that the little Kinder have not picked up their toys.
How could we become the leader of the German peoples when the Kinder do not pick up their toys? Yes. You are greedy little Kinders, aren't
yes.
you?
Yes. I mean, yeah. He forgets his German sometimes. Kaiser Wilhelm.